Welcome in for EHL, powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Brent Doherty with you. Don Davenport on maternity leave. Mickey Ryan on furlough. JT on furlough. That means that David Reed is producing. And Mike Keith, the voice of the Titans, is guest hosting today. Mike, thank you so much for doing this today. I really appreciate it. Having a lot of fun, telling a lot of stories, but also covering a lot of big stories that are coming down today. Big Ten announcing they're only playing conference games if they are medically able to play this fall. That's a pretty big story, and it looks like from around the college world that a lot of people were taken surprised by that announcement.
Yeah, I think so. And Jesse Simonton, who used to work with Brent Hubbs at VolQuest.com, put out the non-conference games that will be lost by this decision. One of the best games in September, Ohio State at Oregon, gone. Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Penn State at Virginia Tech, Michigan at Washington, Iowa, Iowa State, Michigan State at BYU, Cincinnati at Nebraska. Just some of the non-conference games wiped out because the Big Ten is only going to play teams in the Big Ten.
And it's probably going to trickle down to the other conferences in the Power Five, right? I mean, I think that's the way that it's going. And the unfortunate part about that, and you made this point earlier, that they apparently are going to a plan B if everybody's going to only conference play. So that's going to affect some really big non-conference games outside of the Big Ten world. And Jesse Simons is putting out a list of those just for reference sake. USC, Alabama, Baylor, Ole Miss, Virginia, Georgia, Texas at LSU. That's a huge game for those two schools. Tennessee at Oklahoma. Auburn against North Carolina, Mississippi State at North Carolina State, Florida at Florida State, and Kentucky at Louisville in danger now. So it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out and what the next steps are.
Well, it's not good news.
No.
I mean, to start with, it's not good news because it means they're having to take a safer route, what they consider to be a safer route, which means they're stepping back from the original plan. So while it's not good news for the non-conference opponents that are losing games, and it's not going to be good news for the group of five teams that are going to lose games, as we're probably going to see the Pac-12 and the ACC jump on board with conference-only games, and then you know we'll see what the Big 12 and the SEC do after that. But it's a reality. I don't think it's a surprise, and you just hope that you would hope this would be the end of it, but it's probably not.
No, and it's unfortunate, too, because, you know, those group of five schools need these games.
Yes, they do.
They need the payday to help with budget and to pay for other sports. So, obviously, unprecedented times. This move coming today, not necessarily a surprise, maybe the timing of it, a surprise. But if you go to simply conference games, right? Not all conferences are created equally. So at that point, I saw Barrett Salee throw this out there from CBS. At that point, you pretty much have to expand the playoff field for this year, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, like, that's a bad thing. I like, you know, for a long time, the fight over there were two fights with the playoff. Number one was, what would we do at the bowl games? And I mean, everybody came up with a plan where you could include the bowl games, and now they've included the bowl games. So that was a ridiculous argument for years that was held up by the fact that a lot of college coaches didn't want a playoff, and a lot of athletic directors didn't want it because the bowl games were guaranteed money. And now you're judged by a little different standard because if you don't make the playoff at some point, even if you're a high-end team, you're under more pressure. The second part of it, too, was the academians saying they did not want football to become a two-semester sport.
Right.
It's already a two-semester sport. Have you ever heard of spring practice? I mean, that one didn't make much sense either. So, you know, I've always thought a 16-team playoff in December would be really, really exciting.
Oh, my goodness. You're going 16 teams. I like it,
yeah,
man. More football.
I think they'll go eight, but I've always thought there should be a 16-team playoff because then you could work in more bowl games. You've got a chance to do more television. you take advantage of a playoff window in December where no other sport has a playoff. I think it's a big deal for college football if they would go to 16, even if they sort of reduced the regular season footprint and went back to 10 or 11 regular season games.
So if you go to strictly conference games, then how do you make that work? So does Tennessee pick up like Ole Miss and Mississippi State, or do they pick up Auburn and LSU? You know what I'm saying? Does Vanderbilt pick up Alabama?
Well, the first thing you're obviously going to do is you're going to look at the current schedule and you're going to see who has like byes. So if Tennessee and Auburn have the same bye weekend, then you say, that makes a lot of sense. Let's throw Tennessee and Auburn together. I think it's going to be something that, and I promise you, you've got a talk show every day. You'll have 4 hours to discuss it. There are going to be people who, if the SEC goes to this, be throwing a fit that some people get to play Arkansas and some people have to play Alabama as their added games. It's the way it is right now. The NCAA, there's going to be inequity. The NFL, there's going to be inequity. Major League Baseball, there's going to be inequity. It's just going to happen. The thing that we're all going to have to focus on as sports fans, in my opinion, is we're getting to play. There's going to be plenty of stuff in sports that's not fair. I mean, what if we go to Denver in week one, the Titans? We go to Denver in week one, and there are no fans there. What an advantage that is for the Titans.
No doubt.
I mean, and so then we come home the next weekend, and we got 30,000, 35,000 people at Nissan Stadium to play Jacksonville. Okay? That's an advantage, you would think. But then you go to Minnesota. What if by rule they can have their stadium filled? And again, hypothetical, obviously. But the point being, there's going to be inequity and everybody's just going to have to face it. I know it's going to fuel talk shows. It's going to fuel social media. It's going to, you know, that's fun. That's the fun of being a sports fan, but get ready for it. Because it's coming in a situation like this.
Well, and Baltimore made the announcement yesterday, M&T Bank Stadium, they're saying 14,000 or fewer. So that's about 20%.
Yeah.
So 20% at Nissan Stadium would be 13,900. 20%, yeah. 20% at Neyland Stadium would be 20,500. Could you imagine? I'm all in. I'm wearing my mask. I'm socially distancing you. I want it from you. I want to experience what that is like. I want to experience Tennessee and Florida in front of 20,000 people. Could you imagine?
No, but I mean, I think it's the type of thing that's going to happen because I think, you know, the socially distant plan at most stadiums where you keep the same arrangement every week, now different people will be sitting in different seats.
Yep.
But the plan will stay the same. So you'll have Mike and Brent sitting in Section V, Row 15, Seats 1 and 2 for the Charlotte game, so to speak. And then you'll have Mickey and Dawn sitting in the exact same seats for Tennessee against Florida 2 weeks later. I mean, that's going to be the most likely plan at most stadiums.
And so Ravens interesting.
The Ravens have been pretty upfront about it. I admire what they're doing.
It's a crazy stadium. Being there in the playoff game, and they cut alcohol sales at halftime, and we were asking the question in the concourse, and a cop overheard us, and he was like, yeah, we cut it at halftime. There's a reason. First building I've ever been that cut alcohol sales at halftime.
Well, I can tell you why. I've been there so many times.
He said, by the way, if this game continues down this path, he may need our help to get out of here. And he wasn't kidding about that. When we come back in the next segment, we'll talk some Tennessee football. So we'll talk with Ashley Smith, assistant AD for player relations and development. She was just appointed to that position. So we'll ask her what her role is within the athletic department. She, by the way, was a basketball manager for Pat Summitt. So I'm sure she's got some stories. And then on the back end of that segment, we'll get into some Tennessee football. I want to get Mike Keith's take on where he thinks Tennessee is under Jeremy Pruitt. All that coming up in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. 3HL is powered by the Tennessee Lottery. This is 3HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. I'm Brent Doherty. He is Mike Keith, the voice of the Titans, guest hosting today. Appreciate Mike being here. Appreciate y'all listening and participating with the show. You can do it on Twitter at 3HL1045. Let's check in with the new Assistant Athletics Director for Player Relations and Development at the University of Tennessee. Ashley Smith joins us now. Ashley, thank you for the time. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I'm great. How are you guys tonight?
We are doing well. Congratulations on the new role. What are your job responsibilities in this position?
So I am responsible for developing a comprehensive development assistance system for our football student athletes that essentially the moment they get on campus, this program will it'll guide them from enrollment through their transition to, you know, playing at the collegiate level all the way to, you know, their post-football professional career. In addition to this, you know, I'll be working with our guys to really help them to just to understand the platform that they have as University of Tennessee football student athletes to go about and make a positive impact on campus, the community, as well as their families. And then I also have the honor and privilege of working with both our current student athletes and their families, as well as former players, just to, you know, welcome people to campus and make sure that they're proud to be, you know, just members of the University of Tennessee family.
Ashley, this is a job that goes beyond the VFL coordinator and what it was in the past. And it's sort of been a developing role for a long period of time. Where do you hope to take it further than what has been done at the University of Tennessee before?
Yeah, definitely looking to just kind of do something totally different with the program. I think sometimes when you look at just the top football programs in the country, you'll see that they have, it's so much more than just developing the guys on the field, but it's also about developing them off the field. And, you know, I think sometimes when you look at programs, Clemson's Paul Journey or, you know, Ohio State has a program called Real Life Wednesdays. My vision and goal is to make our program at the University of Tennessee the best in the country.
Ashley, what was it about the University of Tennessee for you and for your brother Trey that stood out and now you both are certainly in love with the university and call it home?
You know, I would say that it would have to be the people. I think that both when I was on campus, having an opportunity to work for Pat Summitt and then going on to work at the NCAA, there have been so many people who have been a part of my journey, have been a part of my success. And I think the same thing from the moment that Trey was being recruited, there were a number of people, whether they were individuals that I'd met while I was in college or people who were newly onto the campus that just really rallied around my family. And even I'm sure most people are aware that, you know, in 2015, Trey and I lost our mom unexpectedly, and the University of Tennessee was one of the first universities reaching out to just extend, you know, a loving arm around my family. And then, you know, with Trey going through his health scares, which put him in a position where at one point we weren't even sure if football was going to be in his future. And I think just the way that Coach Fulmer, Coach Pruitt, the medical staff at Tennessee, the other coaches and support staff, just the way that people rallied around him and said, you know what, Trey, we're concerned about you as an individual first. Football is secondary. You know, if you never play football again, we want you to know that we love you, we support you, and we want what's best for you. And I think that when you're someone like me and you have a relative who is a football student athlete, and for people to see his value beyond what he does on the field, that's tremendous. And it just speaks volumes to the type of university and program that we're a part of.
You mentioned his health scare. And sometimes in those situations, as hard as it is on the person going through that, it may be even more challenging for the people that are around him. How difficult was that situation for you and the rest of your family to kind of be there for him, but also to go through that and see what he was going through?
You know, to be very honest, it was extremely difficult. Trey has been playing football since middle school, and it's something that he has worked so hard to excel in the sport. And, you know, even before our mother passed away, he made a promise to her that he would do everything he could to be successful in the sport and go on and play in the professional level. And, you know, obviously he's on track to do that. And so I think to see someone who has so much potential, someone who has poured their heart into, you know, playing a game that they love. And then in the blink of an eye, you know, that could be taken away. It was very scary. It was really trying on our family. But, you know, I'd say one thing that really helped us to get through it is that our parents raised Trey and I to be people of faith. And so, you know, sometimes in life we go through things and we don't understand why, but we do know that God has a purpose and a plan for all that we go through. And I think that our father was tremendous through the process, just being, you know, a source of strength for the both of us. I couldn't imagine as a parent watching your child go through something where, you know, it would be one thing if Trey was going through issues with the blood clots, you know, behind the scenes and in private. But, you know, with Trey being, you know, a figure of such prominence, there were so many people who were writing articles and saying he should just hang it up or he'll never play again. Or if he gets on the field, he'll drop dead and die and all these ridiculous things. So we're trying to work through all that as a family. And at the same time, just trust God through the process. So it was difficult for sure, but I think that it made us all stronger, wiser. And I think that it took all of our faith to another level.
Ashley, what do you take from your time with Pat Summitt that you use as you take on this, obviously a very big role at the University of Tennessee, something you're obviously proud of at this moment in time at a very early age?
Yeah, that's a difficult question, to be honest. There's so much that I learned from Coach Summitt. I think one thing that she taught me was that you win in life with people, that it's always so important to treat people with respect, whether you're dealing with, you know, the janitor of the university or whether you're dealing with the president of the university, just make sure that you're treating people the right way. I think also Coach Summitt taught me the importance of working hard. I think that's one thing that I take a great source of pride in, is that with every opportunity that I've had to advance my career, I truly worked hard for it and tried to go about things the right way. And I would also say that she taught me just the importance of remaining humble, no matter how much success that you experience. One thing that I absolutely loved about Coach Summitt is what you saw on TV was the same woman that you saw behind the scenes. And even me being someone who, you know, was a student manager for the Lady Vols basketball program, I had a chance to really get to know Coach Summitt on a level where I knew that she cared. You know, I never once scored a basket for the university. I never got a steal for the university, but Coach Summitt took time day in and day out to pour into Ashley Smith, to let me know that she cared about me, she saw purpose and value in me, and that she was willing to do everything she could to help me succeed.
Your job as part of this athletic department is obviously very front-facing. You're going to run into the parents of prospective student-athletes on a consistent basis. What's the most important thing you want them to know about you and the part of the program at Tennessee that you're offering and representing?
I think I want them to know that I genuinely care about not only, you know, the prospective student-athletes, the current student-athletes, but about the families. When football players or, you know, student-athletes of any sport, when they make a decision to sign with a program, that's a life-changing experience. And not only does it impact on the athlete, but it impacts the families as well. And so I want them to know that I'm someone that I genuinely care, but also I want them to see that the University of Tennessee has a powerful alumni base, a powerful just network of, you know, businesses, supporters of this university, and that this essentially is a place where it's rich in resources that our student athletes can tap into, not only to be successful during their time playing football here, but also during the time in which football comes to an end.
In terms of football, Ashley Smith, assistant AD for player relations and development at the University of Tennessee, in terms of football, you're around that football program daily. Can you explain the culture that you experience on a day-to-day basis there?
You know, it's funny you ask that, because I had a moment where some of my friends were saying, wait, you're going back to football? Like, are you crazy? Because, you know, football definitely requires a lot of your time, and, you know, a lot of people involved with our football staff, you know, they make some different sacrifices as it relates to, you know, personal lives and things of that nature. But I would say that it has been such an incredible experience being back and being a part of Coach Pruitt's staff. There's such such a positive energy, and it's almost kind of electric. I think that, you know, I have a chance to work with so many incredible coaches who, you know, have had great success at various universities, but also I think the biggest thing that kind of stands out to me is that Coach Pruitt is a man of honesty and integrity, and he's someone who he truly does care about her. He truly does care about his players. I remember when it was announced that he was going to be the head football coach here, and so many athletes were contacting Trey, whether they were guys who played at Alabama or played at Florida State or played at Georgia, just telling Trey that, you know, if they could just transfer just to play for Jeremy Pruitt, they would do that. And so I think I get to see what exactly that means and why, just because I think he's done an incredible job of setting a high standard for our staff. But I think it's one in which people truly do enjoy being around each other. And I think we're really excited about the product that can be produced both on the field and off the field.
Let me talk about the off the field for just a second, from the standpoint that you have this diverse background. Even though you're a young person in this world, you've had a chance to be with Pat Summitt while you're on campus. You've worked for the NCAA. You've worked in different parts of the athletic department. If I'm not mistaken, you spent time with Barry Rice and Link Hudson with VFL Films. And so here's what I'm wondering. With this change that we've got on the way to college athletics, where athletes are going to have a chance to build their own brand while they're in college and potentially benefit from that, is that going to be something that factors into your job going forward as those opportunities develop?
For sure. And to be honest, I think it's going to be factored into the roles of various individuals who are working in different departments within our athletics department. I would say a front player or a front runner to this would be our compliance office. You know, they work with the NCAA on a regular basis just to make sure that they're being educated on, you know, different rules and whatnot as it relates to this. And then they do a fantastic job of, you know, relaying that information to myself and other members within athletics to make sure that we are educating and empowering our student athletes to be in the best position possible as it relates to name, image, and likeness. But, you know, I really think that as far as an athletics department, it's really going to be all hands on deck, just making sure that we're crossing T's and dotting I's to where, you know, guys now have an opportunity, you know, to benefit from their name, image, and likeness. But we want to make sure that they're staying within the guidelines and that they're staying compliant to NCAA rules and regulations.
Ashley, we would like to make sure that you tell Trey not to play for any NFL team other than the Titans. that he will only come play for the Titans. Can you do that for us?
Well, I don't know if I can go that far, but I will say that, you know, the state of Tennessee has a special place in my heart as well as Trey's heart. And that's from, you know, the university. He has a strong love for the Titans. So, you know, I think that he would be jumping up for joy if things worked out to where he had an opportunity to play for the Titans, for sure. But, you know, it's just been such an honor and a privilege for the both of us to rep our state. I think the state is unlike any other. And so we're just very proud and we're doing our best to, you know, make Tennesseans both all the way from West Tennessee to East Tennessee proud of Ashley and Trey Smith.
Ashley, great job. Really appreciate the time. Congrats on the new role, Assistant AD for Player Relations and Development. Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for having me on.
Appreciate it.
Brett Daugherty, that's a superstar right there. For the people who just heard Ashley Smith for the first time and are coming to know that name, her brother is a superstar, but she is regarded as a superstar in so many different areas. And I think this promotion for her was a no-brainer. She's going to do big things in the world of athletics or whatever she chooses to do. She was, you know, when they got her back from the NCAA, they thought they had won a big recruiting battle. And you hear her, you hear her plan, you understand what she's about. You know, the last part, they had a great answer to the question about the likeness and image.
Yeah.
You could act like, oh, well, we don't really want. No, that's going to be part of the world. If you're recruiting a kid, And yeah, you better know what you're doing. You better be cutting edge after that rule has been changed. And you heard from her answer, she gets it. Tennessee's very lucky to have her. and going to have to fight to hold on to her because she's going to do big things.
Yeah, she sounded like an AD to me. And 3 years with Pat Summitt, and she made that transition to Holly Warlick. And she's phenomenal. Can you imagine Ashley Smith talking to moms and grandmas about their baby?
Well, you're always looking for those people in athletic departments who are secret weapons. And, Tennessee has had a couple over the years. A guy named Scott Altizer, who's now at Chattanooga, is one of their top guys.
Phenomenal.
He's a great recruiter. He's a great evaluator of talent and a real connector, too. And then the late Judy Jackson, who was a lady that at one point when Tennessee lost a coach, Philip Fulmer sent her on the road.
That's right.
She got certified and was sent on the road. So you're all, and every school has these secret weapons who are these folks who do their job well. They're special people. They're talented people. And they help you form the culture of the place where you are. Carmen Tagano is a longtime guy there who has that same sort of reputation, being close with so many former athletes because he was there for them at key moments. And I'm just using the example of people at the University of Tennessee because that's what we're discussing at this moment. But when you look at schools and you see schools who recruit well, it's not just the front-facing folks that we see on television and hear on the radio, read about in the newspaper. They've always got the secret weapons. And that sounds to me like a weapon who's not going to remain secret for very long.
Speaking of Tennessee, Mike, how impressed have you been with Jeremy Pruitt so far and the direction of that program? Do you feel fundamental growth from that program?
I felt fundamental growth last year, even when I saw him losing to Georgia and Alabama because of the physicality with which they played. Tennessee for years got run over at the line of scrimmage. I mean, just flattened. I mean, there were plenty of teams. I mean, a couple of years ago, Vanderbilt ran over him at the line of scrimmage. Missouri ran over him at the line of scrimmage. It was on and on and on. And obviously, the bigger boys really had their way with him. Last year, we saw that improvement. We saw them get to the Georgia game. They had a chance to beat Georgia, let Georgia off the hook that night right before halftime, cost them the game. But they played physical. And then they played physical, Mississippi State, they had played physical in that game, the Alabama game, and then down the stretch. That's what SEC football is all about. It's not pretty and, oh, we're special and we're going to out, do this or do that. You've got to get in there and be ready to hit somebody and be ready to bring it for four quarters because there's going to be a physicality in the athletes. That told me. Weight program's working, coaching's working, you're recruiting the right athletes, guys are getting the right mindset. That's what SEC football is all about, and we started to see that in October last year, and it developed through the rest of the year.
It's interesting when you talk about the trenches. I think when you look at the defensive front going into the 2020 season, I think they can hold up very well against the run. I think one question mark is, can you develop consistent pass rush without having to scheme it up? Offensive line, we talked about it a little earlier. They've got a chance to be as good up front offensively as they've been in years.
Yeah, they do. And, they're eight deep. In terms of the talent and the ability to rotate people. And I'm counting Mays getting eligible
right
in that eight, and we'll have to wait and see. But the other thing they've got, too, is they have enough depth that they have the ability to redshirt some guys. And when you look at great programs throughout, different times, having the ability to redshirt offensive linemen is always a big deal. I mean, if you look at West End and what Derek Mason has been able to do, he's been able to bring offensive linemen along, and he's been able to have consistency. Obviously, not every offensive lineman at Alabama is a five-star. Chance Warmack, who played for us, was a three-star, a player that they developed. Big guys in sort of every sport sometimes need seasoning, and having that ability with some of those folks is a big, big deal.
I think Palmer has a chance on the outside to be that dog. Some question marks at wide receiver. Obviously, they lost a couple of playmakers where, when in doubt, you could just throw the ball up and let those guys be physical and go get it. kind of like throwing a lob pass in basketball. But that run game has a chance to be really good, too, with the emergence of Eric Gray. I saw that kid play high school football. I knew what they had in him. And Ty Chandler, same thing, called his games in high school, running behind Jackson Lampley in these gaping holes. They've got a chance to be pretty good in that run game. Got to develop some wide receivers.
They do. And, you know, Velus Jones can help being the graduate transfer. That's a big deal. They certainly have some other guys waiting in the wings. Palmer had the great catch against Kentucky and sort of you said, okay, if you can do that, there's a lot you can do. There's a lot, you know, there, Ramil Keaton, interesting player. I mean, they've got some guys, but they just don't have that proven ability with what they lost. And that's going to be the challenge for the offense. But, you know, they certainly have more athletes than they did. And they are getting back in that mix. We mentioned the physicality, the power. But Tennessee had gotten so flipping slow. I mean, I never thought I would see the day when Tennessee would be one of the slowest teams in the SEC. That's picking back up. But it's not there yet. And that's what they're having. And if he holds this recruiting class together,
yeah,
the one that he's got committed, he's got a chance to get that speed back to where it needs to be. It's on the way. It needs one more class.
He's Mike Keith. I'm Brent Doherty. This is 3HL. Got to get a couple of John Ward stories from you when we come back to close things out. We'll do that next. 3HL on 104.5 The Zone. HL powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Wrapping up our day with special guest co-host Mike Keith today. Tomorrow, coming up on Friday in terms of guest co-hosts, we've got two tomorrow. From 3 until 6, we will welcome former Georgia quarterback Hudson Mason into the guest host chair. He does a midday show on 680 The Fan in Atlanta. Look forward to that. Also, from 2 until 3 o'clock, this guy hadn't been on the radio in a minute. But he spent a lot of years on the radio in this market. Former co-host of Sports Night, which is a powerhouse show on 99.7 WTM back in the day. Blake Fulton in the mix from 2 until 3. So look forward to those two guys. Appreciate you all staying with us this week. Mickey will be back on Monday. Look forward to having part of the team back on Monday. But certainly appreciate you, Mike. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been a great opportunity to talk about a lot of things and things popping up today. And obviously the Big Ten news is the biggest news of the day. And not surprising. I mean, I really felt like this first full week of July would be the time that a lot of this stuff would hit. And it's obviously hitting.
Yep. They're going to just play conference games was the announcement. So college football world reacting to that. I'm curious, you began working for the Vol Network while you were a student at Tennessee. Tell us about the first time you met John Ward.
Met him in the parking lot at his office after they had tried me out for, there were two jobs. There was a work in the studio job, and I didn't want that. And then there was a be in the booth and do post-game interviews with players job, and I wanted that. The work in the studio job was a bigger job, but I didn't want to miss the games. I wanted to go to the games. And so he decided that I was going to go to the studio. And the first and the first time I met him, he explained to me why, and I was going to argue with him, and then after he started talking, I wasn't talking. And the reason I wasn't because it was John Ward, but also because I was just so intimidated, I literally couldn't speak.
What stood out, your time with him, what stood out to you? What did you learn from him that you took with you with the role that you have with regard to the Tennessee Titans play-by-play gig?
That he was far and above the best person that I've ever met to do that job. And I equate him with all of the great national guys. I think he had he chosen to do it, he could have done it at that level. He was so prepared. He was so thorough. He knew what he wanted to do. He set out with a plan every single week, and he executed the plan every single week. He was just really a unique human being. If I live another 100 years, I'll never meet another person like John Ward. He was odd in some senses, but he was odd for the specific reason of he wanted to do it in a very precise way. He was also a genius intellect, which literally a genius intellect, which made him very different from anybody I hung around with or currently hang around with.
Tell me this, because I've growing up listening to him call games on big plays. He would tell you there's no flag. That's a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go to the Music City Miracle. And one of the more famous things that you say is there are no flags on the field. Did that come from him?
Straight from him. Yep, straight from him, because the thing he always said is, I don't want to get the audience up on a long return only to bring them down because I missed the penalty flag. So I try very hard to look back for flags. That time I got it right. I don't always, but that totally came from John Ward.
Describe, we only have a minute left or so, but that moment in the Music City Miracle, just calling the play, did you think that it might be a lateral or a forward pass? Like,
yeah.
did that even come up in your head as you're calling the play?
Yeah, absolutely, because our angle was such that we couldn't, from our booth, we couldn't tell.
Yeah.
So that's why I was consistently looking for the flag, because I wasn't sure based on the look. And then when I saw the first replay, it was obvious to me from the first replay that it was good. But in the moment, couldn't tell exactly. So, yeah, that's why I had to keep looking back. And that's why I didn't sound too utterly crazy until after he'd scored. And then I sound utterly crazy.
Well, fun day, Mike. I really appreciate you doing this. We will have everything podcast where you can get podcasts. Apple Podcast is one place so you can rate, review, and subscribe there. But thank you very much for today, man.
Oh, it was a pleasure. A lot of fun. Thanks for having me, and thanks to David Reed, too.
Yep. Thanks to everybody listening. For Mike Heath, David Reed, I'm Brent Doherty. Good night. God bless.